The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
He is a colonel in the Colorado Army National Guard.
Duty, honor, country.
And district attorney for Colorado's 18th Judicial District.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Most important, he's a father and a proud American.
Americans love a winner.
He is George Brockler. And this is The George Show on News Talk 710 KNUS.
I'm brought to you courtesy of the red wine.
Everything that guy just says,
bull. We are back. Denver, Colorado, and places beyond that. This is George Brockler on the George Show, 710 KNUS. If you've been paying attention during the 2.5 months of house arrest here in Colorado and elsewhere, the economy has taken a big, big hit. We have sucker punched the economy, and it is on the mat. Whether or not it will be able to get up off the mat is still an open question, given how much we have left to deal with this. We just don't know. But one of the impacts to the state of Colorado, and one that's going to have to be dealt with here starting this month again when the legislature reopens, in fact, I think they're starting it already, is how do we deal with the massive budget hole that was created when we lost jillions of dollars of tax revenue. Now, listen, there are only a handful of people that are on this joint budget committee. If you've never heard that term before, we're going to get made smarter by our next guest. But we have one of the members on right now, my representative, Kim Ransom. Thank you for getting up so early. I presume you've been up for a couple hours, Kim, but thank you for joining us on the show.
Good morning, George. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for doing this. First off, do me a little favor and tell the listeners, describe your district just very briefly.
North Douglas County. It includes Parker and Lone Tree and then some areas of unincorporated Douglas County. So it's a kind of a long, narrow rectangle, if you will. But at the same time, the bottom edge is zigzag. So it's not a straight line across the bottom boundary.
And because I live in Parker, you are my representative, and you're doing a tremendous job. I'm not just saying that because you're my representative. I just know you're doing a tremendous job. Part of that job is you serving on the Joint Budget Committee. For people out there listening that don't know what that is, describe it.
The Joint Budget Committee is six people that are charged with writing the state budget. And it is comprised of three members of the House and three from the Senate.
Are they Republican and Democrat? I'm sorry.
Well, two are from the majority party of each House, and one is from the minority party of each House. So if you do the math, you'll think through it, realize that Democrats have the majority in both the House and the Senate, meaning that the Joint Budget Committee is 4-2.
And so they're driving the agenda on what to do with the budget, but you have a very big voice there.
I do. I do have a big voice. Many of the items, and this is mostly what we refer to as the JBC bills, they require a 6-0 vote in order to be a JBC bill. That being said, they can still run whatever bills they want. They just wouldn't come through the JBC. They would have to be run as normal bills, and they obviously, clearly, they can get late bill status because they have the majority and they have leadership in both houses.
Now, in normal years, how big, Representative Ransom, is the state budget?
Well, the state budget here has been growing hugely. It has been growing at several percent a year. Usually about $1 billion a year.
Wow.
It has been growing for about the past I'm going to say 8 to 10 years, and I don't know that exactly, but I know as long as I've been there, it's been growing at least $1 billion a year.
Oh my goodness!
So we were looking at, and last November when we got the first round of the budget starts with the governor's proposed budget, and it was right about $34 billion, and right now we're looking at about $30 billion.
Now that's a big hit. Right? That's a huge hit.
It's a big hit. It was about $3.5 billion to pull out of the budget. And when you look at the fact that these are rough percentages, but how we always look at it is a third of that is K-12, and a third of that is Medicaid and, you know, those types of health services, much of which is driven by a federal match. And a lot of that is required, you know, for us to get the federal match, we have to cover everybody, for example, that qualifies for Medicaid. So that really leaves us about a third. So when we're talking about $10 billion, roughly, to take out $3 billion or $3.5 billion of that, it's a pretty big deal.
Now, we're coming up on the end of the state's fiscal year. And for people out there that do any sort of accounting, whether you're working with the government at the federal level or state level, there's just different ways to do it, right? There's the normal calendar year, January 1 through December 31st. There's the federal one where the year starts October 1st and runs through September 30th. But the state of Colorado does it differently. They go July 1 to June 30th. So we're coming to the end of that fiscal year. Does any of this shortfall that you've described impact what the obligations are of the state in the remaining month and a half-ish?
Yes, but not very much. We're talking, and I know this is going to sound like an awful lot to your listeners, but we're talking about, you know, a couple hundred million. And that is actually, we can work with that. That we can take care of. And that is just because we still have a cash flow issue. For example, the income tax revenue that we would have expected to see by April 15th, remember, was delayed until the deadlines were delayed until July 15th. We still know that money's coming because, remember, the taxes that you pay in April are from 2019, and that was money already earned, already accounted for in most cases. Most people have already put that away. Most businesses have already put that away and planned for it. So that's a little bit of juggling, but not a huge, I mean, it's an impact, but it's something we can deal with. The big one is what is starting July 1st, because we have been working for 2 weeks now, trying very hard to carve. And by the way, this is going to get a little bit political because I have lots of ideas of places we can cut, you know, and ideas, things we can cut. But, you know, I'm not joined. Remember, I don't have the majority in the JBC to pass my cuts. And so we're having, you know, people that are very, very troubled by cutting programs, even things like grant programs, even things like, you know, social benefit programs, even financial aid for people in schools, you know, in colleges, excuse me. And I would think that some of those we should be cutting if we have to hit a $3.5 billion cut. So we have actually cut about $1 billion
already
right now.
Already cut $1 billion?
Well, we have agreed.
I get that part. Like, it hasn't actually taken place, but you have an agreement on it. We're talking with Representative Kim Ransom from Douglas County, only Republican House member of the Joint Budget Committee. Kim, a lot of people out there know this, but not every listener knows this, and that is we're not the federal government. We can't deficit spend, right? We just can't keep spending more than we take in. We have a balanced budget amendment. So when you're talking about cuts, there may be people out there thinking, why do they have to keep cutting this? It's because at the end of the day, you got to have balanced books. And so you got to figure out a way to make what comes in match what's going out. And you've talked about some ideas that you have. Do you have some specific things that you'd like to try? And then I'm going to ask you, how optimistic are you that you can get any kind of an agreement on that?
Well, I think as we start working through the budget, which we will, we're getting into the really deep cuts. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is when we're really going to have to start looking at some of the deeper cuts. Just so you know, we have done very, very little in the K-12 arena, and that's mainly because I think all six of us have that as one of our priorities,
right,
that we want to maintain K-12 funding. That is, you know, it's in the Constitution, you know, that we provide, you know, public an appropriate public school education for every child in Colorado. And I think we all want to maintain that.
Does that include the full-day paid kindergarten? I'm sorry to cut you off, Kim. Does that include the governor's recently passed full-day paid kindergarten?
Well, that is actually in the budget right now because that was passed. It was signed off by the governor. It was passed in both houses of the legislature last year, signed off by the governor. It's now part of the base. However, $220 million to have full-day kindergarten is a pretty big chunk.
That's
when you're trying
chunk.
To find, you know, $2.5 billion more, $220 million is a nice way to start charting that. I don't know what it's going to look like. I hate to make cuts once we've given them to schools, mainly because I like local control. And if the local schools already have something and they're planning on it in their budget, pulling it back is hurtful to them. That being said, we still have to, like you said, we have a balanced budget amendment in Colorado. We must cut back $2.5 billion more. And when I'm not hearing the majority party start to agree to some of the other big ticket items that could work to help balance the budget, I think it starts getting kind of scary, you know, with what we can and can't do.
To answer your question,
full day K is on the table.
Okay, and so that people know out there, because I think this thing gets spun as trying to defund full-day kindergarten, even before this bill that the governor championed was offered and passed, and funded, by the way, on a misunderstanding, I think, and almost a reckless one, about how many of these school districts would actually ask for the money, the vast majority of school districts already offered full-day kindergarten. This money just went to pay those districts to keep that funding going. So I agree with you that once they start to rely on that money and they start spending the money they would have spent on full day kindergarten anyway on something else, we kind of put them in a very tough spot. But at the same time, that is something that has to be considered. Now, with oil and gas being such a huge previously economic driver, a huge source of tax money, the combination of Colorado having a hostile economic environment for oil and gas development and exploration, plus global crashing of oil and gas numbers, we don't really have them to fall back on to say, well, hey, as soon as the economy picks back up, we're going to V-shape our way out of this, and oil and gas will help save us the way they did after the recession. So what are the other big cuts or not cuts you're hearing? Like, what is the other side's answer to $2.5 billion that you've identified?
Well, all I keep hearing is we can't balance the budget on the backs of ... So I've heard state employees, I've heard students, I've heard some of the social welfare programs where they want to help people and take care of people, the homeless people, things like that. And I feel like they're starting to feel like they're up against a wall. But you have to remember that, yes, we're looking forward, realizing, all right, this is a problem we all have to solve. But when you start looking at the causes, the root causes of it, this is the accumulation of overspending the past several years. When you start looking at the fact that Colorado, even with the constraints that we have, i.e. a balanced budget amendment, we have the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, which, by the way, is saving us. It is not hurting us right now. We need to remember that all these programs that we have been adding on, all these grant programs, things that bills that people have been passing the past few years, the FTE, we have huge numbers of state employees that are very, very expensive. We have the PARA, you know, the state retirement plan that is quite expensive as well and not fully funded. So there are some ways that we can tweak that and delay a couple payments, which will and still keep it solvent. I mean, obviously, there are still requirements to be made, but again, requirements to be kept. But just so you know, what's happening is that we're carving around the edges so far, and that's what we've been agreeing on. And that, I think, is where we got to that first $1 billion.
Now it's the hard stuff.
Exactly.
Are you hearing discussions from your peers under the Gold Dome for any support for a tax increase? And I ask that in the context of the fact that even the governor has said, man, we're not raising taxes in a recession. There are going to be two competing ballot measures, one that seeks to raise taxes, the other that seeks to cut them for everybody. What are you hearing from the other side on that?
Believe me, I really haven't heard a lot, because remember, we just defeated another cut at what it would have been a tax increase.
Yep.
And that's thanks to you, Mr. Brockler. Please let me put in a little plug here for you and your team that helped defeat that last November. The voters of Colorado have made it clear that they want us to operate lean and mean. They want us to have an efficient, tight budget, and they want us to be, you know, to have limited government here in Colorado. I am absolutely willing to live up to that and to do what the voters have told us to do. Those are our marching orders. And the voters have made it clear multiple times now, and we need to just move forward with that. So to answer your question, I have not really heard people talk about it, mainly because there's nothing we could do between now and the next 3 weeks to raise taxes anyway, or to increase revenue per se.
Last question out there. I'm sorry, Kim, we're just about to run out of time, but last question I want to get to. You have heard and seen that governors across the country have either physically gone or reached out to the president and to Congress and said, pretty please with sugar on top, generate a bill that will float us, that will backfill the budget deficits that we have. What's your opinion on those?
Hey, we pay federal taxes too. You know, a lot of times I hear things, well, those are just federal dollars coming in. That's just a federal match. Those are just federal dollars. You and I pay the IRS too, not just our state taxes. So just because they're printing money, our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren are going to be paying off the national deficits that are there.
Oh my goodness, and yeah.
I am not one to say, let's just start printing money and keep going business as usual. I think at this point, it's time to start cutting programs. And by programs, I've mentioned some of them before, but we have databases. We have lots and lots of employees. And, you know, we keep hiring more, for example, in many of the areas. And I'm not talking about, by the way, law enforcement. I'm not talking about teachers. I don't want to lose any of those. I'm talking more about the bureaucrats. I'm talking about the people that sit at desks and write reports. I'm talking about people that go to meetings and talk about ways to, you know, to do things.
At the state level, too, every one of those is a para employee. So when you talk about the pension issue with the budget, every new state employee is a para employee, and they put pressure on that system.
They do, but the new ones actually help the system because they pay in the para for many years, which helps support the retirees that are already earning or getting their para, and so their retirement. And so it really it's a scheme, you know. It's kind of upside down. But you're right. Then in the long run, if we don't grow the state number of employees, then we can't pay the ones that we have now. But as we do grow it, then that gives us a bigger base 40 years from now that we have to be supporting. So I'm not positive how to resolve that one. We did pass a bill a couple years ago, SB 200, that really cleaned up the system a lot, shorted up, tightened up when we would be fully funded. It brought it back to about 30 years. And now it looks like with what we're doing right now, we're going to extend that back out at least a couple of years. We got a presentation from the para board, the para the people that run it, just a couple days ago, and so we saw the numbers, and we're out into the 2040s again, late 2040s, looking at and up to 2050, about when we're going to get it back under control.
Representative. Thank you. I'm so sorry, Kim. We got to cut away to a break.
No,
but
okay.
Representative Kim Ransom, the only Republican House member on the Joint Budget Committee, my House member out of wonderful Douglas County. Thank you so much for joining us, especially this early on a Saturday morning, Kim. And keep doing great work out there on our budget.
My pleasure. And thank you, George. Please keep talking about what's going on right now. We'll appreciate you as well.
We'll do it. I'll have you back, by the way, once you guys figure out how to solve this thing.
Happy to come back anytime.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Representative Kim Ransom from Douglas County. When we come back, the doctor in the house, Mike Wexler. This is George Brockler, The George Show, 710 KNUS.